The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
This is Jackson Brown, and you're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, this is John from Five for Fighting, and you got my buddy, my longtime friend, the lovely Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Donald Fagen.
And this is Walter Becker.
You know, Steely Dan. And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, this is Jake Slichter.
John Munson.
Dan Wilson. We are Semisonic.
And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Melissa Etheridge, and you're listening to my friend, Nicole Sandler.
Hey, how you doing out there? This is Ziggy Marley, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, everybody, this is Pat Monahan from the band Train, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler, my favorite on-air personality.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Music to my ears.
I figured I'd get us started musically today because we're going to a concert tonight. You know me with music, and it's one of my favorite artists. Joe Jackson is touring again. He's in Fort Lauderdale tonight at a great little theater called the Parker Playhouse, which is a wonderful room for a show. And Joe Jackson is always, I mean, he's the ultimate musician. So I'm excited. You know, I don't get out much these days, and I don't get to see music as much as that I would like or that I used to. And so, I'm excited. So when the show ends, we will not be going into overtime tonight. I got to bolt out of here, and I'm going to try to get the podcast posted before I leave. But in case it's late, you know what? I'll upload it to the server. So at least if you normally get it automatically downloaded, you'll still get it. But I probably will not post it to the blog until afterwards. Okay. But I figured since I'm going to enjoy some music tonight, we'd start things off with a little bit of timely and topical music, as it were, from one of our favorites. You know her, you love her, Lauren Mayer. And she's got the perfect little ditty for what we've been going through this week. So take it away, Lauren Mayer.
As more damning evidence keeps appearing from Trump's enablers, we keep hearing about how they bravely stepped away. To those hypocrites, I've got this to say. There's no such thing as team normal when you're living in the world of Trump. You fanned the fire of a petulant child who said, come to the Capitol, it'll be wild. Since you stayed quiet despite your duty, you're as full of bunk as drunk Uncle Rudy. So don't claim to be on team normal. You were all part of team coup. Your testimony isn't heroic when you legitimized this crap. You humored his claims, no matter how zany, and forced us all to applaud Liz Cheney. You spread lies to appeal to the base, even if there's no hair dye dripping down your face. There's no such thing as team normal. You were all part of team coup. Sure, now you rats are jumping the ship, but when it mattered, you didn't do zip. You never refuted that grifting crook till you got a subpoena or a deal for a book. And now you're concerned about your reputations? None of you folks are team normal. There were no adults in the room. I believe Bill Barr, you can breathily say, but you called the rioters patriots that day. The Donnie's consolation as the hearings get hotter is at least he finally got screwed by his daughter. But that fake voice doesn't make her team normal. Just listening to her, I think, ew. You couldn't take his nonsense anymore, but you say you'll still vote for him in 24. Honey, that's not team normal. You're still acting like team coup. You're all the same. You're just grifting schmucks who use the big lie to rake in big bucks. And there's no such thing as team normal when you were complicit and you can't dismiss it that you are all part of team coup.
Lauren Mayer, everybody. Oh, yeah. No such thing as team normal. Yeah, well, you knew that. She does such great work. Find her at Lauren Mayer, Lauren's Comedy. She's everywhere. You know what? It's been a while. We're going to have Lauren back on the show to do, you know, just a day of fun, you know, spotlight her stuff. And we're going to have a little break in the action in which we can do it. Because after, well, this week is just nuts. So let me run down the week for you. Right. Monday was a holiday, of course. It was Juneteenth, legal holiday. So nothing much happened, news wise in terms of committee hearings and lawsuits and things like that, or Supreme Court rulings. Right. Then yesterday, Tuesday, the Supreme Court handed down opinions in five cases. We talked at length with Barry Lynn yesterday. President Emeritus of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, because it was one of those heinous rulings that we expected, where the Supreme Court said, yeah, of course you can use public tax dollars to pay for parochial religious school in Maine. What? Yeah. So that happened. Now, we know the Supreme Court finished up this term hearing cases a few weeks ago, and they usually announce them all by the end of June. Well, that leaves about a week, right? So what happens is this week, and last year they went into July. It seems that they don't want to do that this time, because the last two outings, on Monday, they released five opinions, and I think the Thursday before that, they released six. So there are still 13 left to go. So you figure they're going to do it again tomorrow. They start at 10 a.m. Eastern sharp. And if you want to know where many of us are hanging out to watch them come down, SCOTUSblog.com, because they have a live blog and they say, you know, exactly when they come down in 10-minute intervals beginning at 10 a.m. sharp. And there's a procedure, and SCOTUSblog explains it all for you. So for those of us who are unsure of how it all works. So tomorrow morning, they will release another batch, probably another five. And then they've scheduled yet another day. They don't usually hand down decisions on Fridays, but this week they are. So we have decisions tomorrow. We have decisions on Friday. In the middle there, tomorrow afternoon, we have the next of the January 6th hearings, the House Select Committee. But tomorrow, those hearings will not begin at 1 p.m. Eastern. Oh, no, that would be to make too much sense. Tomorrow, they begin at 3 Eastern, which makes me think it's not going to be over by 5, so I think I need to call Howie Klein and probably delay us again. I don't know. We'll figure that out when the time comes. But so, busy week, right? So Wednesday, this is sort of our day off, our palate cleansing day, as it were. So Lisa Graves will be along in just a moment. I'll explain or reintroduce you to her. But she is our legal expert here on the Nicole Sandler Show. So we'll talk to Lisa today about all of this. And then tomorrow, it's back in the trenches. Supreme Court decisions at 10 Eastern, hearing at 3 Eastern, and then Friday morning, 10 Eastern, more Supreme Court decisions. And just so you know, we wrap up the week here on Friday with David Dayen of the American Prospect. And I couldn't think of anyone better to sort of pull the week's events into some semblance of organization to tell us where we are, where we're going. See, now after that, I had heard an interview with Benny Thompson, the chair of the House Select Committee. I think it was yesterday, maybe the day before. And he said that there are still five more hearings to go. And that was, okay, so that was before yesterday. So it seemed to me that after this week, there would be three more. Well, there may be three more, but there may be more than that. The committee today announced that following tomorrow's hearing, the committee will basically hold off on the, quote, two final hearings it had planned for this month and push them into July. You see, what they say is there's so much information that's coming at them since the hearings began that, you know, they're having to reorganize and get more information. For instance, one person who is, I don't know if he's testifying tomorrow or, oh, I know what it is. Now I remember. He is sitting for a deposition tomorrow, a closed deposition earlier in the day, to go over this like 24 hours of footage that he had a shooting with. I don't even remember who it was. I want to say, you know, shooting inside the White House. I mean, this guy had inside access and he's got a lot of video. So it's going to take them a while to go through it. But apparently this filmmaker is cooperating. And other people are now coming forward as the news spreads, as people are hearing what actually happened. So we'll have like a, you know, a 2 week beginning of summer break. Well, of course, you know, after Friday, Congress is going out for 2 weeks. As well. I think, is it Friday? Oh, no, it's next week. No, next week. So they've got a deal on this gun legislation, such as it is. I guess I should be happy they're doing something, something, anything. My concern that I didn't get to spit out when I did that TV interview last week, my concern is that Republicans are taking a very tiny baby step to say, okay, more better expanded background checks for young people between the ages of 18 and 21 who want to buy one of these ridiculous assault weapons. And they'll be able to look into their juvenile records if one of these kids wants to purchase one of these weapons. And that's a good thing. Incentives for states to enact red flag laws. Well, that's a bit of nothing. Again, my fear is that the Republicans are going to tout this as the best thing since sliced bread. And look what we did. We came to the table. We got you gun control legislation. Well, no, if you listen to the Democrats, if you listen to reasonable people talking about it, this is the first step. But, you know, if you were looking at it through their lens, this is it. This is all you get. And what I'm afraid of is they're going to make a big to-do. They're going to get this thing passed. 14 Republicans voted for it last night. So the filibuster is not an issue. But only 14 of them agreed to vote for it or did vote to move it along in the process because the Democrats gave so much in terms of what they were asking for in the first place. So we'll have time to go through the deal and what's in it. We'll maybe do that next week when the hearings are on a short break. And, well, and actually they'll be debating the gun stuff. So we'll deal with that next week anyway. So those are the two big pieces of news. Supreme Court will issue decisions this Friday in addition to tomorrow. So adding the extra day, obviously they want to wrap up the remaining 13 cases on the docket before the end of June, which is officially when the term ends. So, and depending what cases they decide to announce tomorrow and Friday, all hell could break loose this weekend and next week and the 2 weeks the Congress is on recess. So, you know what, we'll talk with Lisa about all of this. In fact, let's get Lisa on the line. So Lisa Graves, if you've listened to this program for any amount of time, you know Lisa Graves. She is a friend of the show. She's been a friend of mine for a number of years. She is one of the most genuinely nice, good people out there. I mean, when you hear her, she sound, you know, she's from Wisconsin. So there is something to that Midwest, you know, friendliness. But she's definitely got that. Anyway, so Lisa Graves these days is the executive director of an organization called True North Research. They're at truenorthresearch.org. But Lisa's background...
Hi, it's Lisa Graves.
Hey, Lisa Graves. It's Nicole Sandler calling.
Oh, hi, Nicole. Thank you for calling me.
Oh, well, thank you for agreeing to be with me. Now, I know you're on Capitol Hill today. Are you in a place where you can talk?
I am. I am clear from the... from the crowds.
Okay. So what are you doing there? You meeting with people on issues that you're working on? What's your business on Capitol Hill today?
Well, I wanted to meet with some folks about the Supreme Court and the decisions that are coming down and And also talk with some of my friends and colleagues in town about, you know, the January 6th hearings and more. So, I'm back in DC this week, and,
Yeah, I was going to ask what the mood is like there. It's got to be weird with these hearings playing out and people, you know, a lot of people who stuck their head in the sand and weren't paying attention. I guess some of them couldn't avoid what we've heard over the last couple of weeks.
Well, that's true. I think many Americans are watching. And when I was walking through one of the House buildings, they had the setup for the media. And of course, all the major media in the U.S., TV media was there, TV news, except for Fox, which isn't really news.
No.
At the national broadcast level. So they were absent, and they have, you know, basically refused to broadcast to their listeners the truth in response to the many lies and much deception that Tucker Carlson and some of his colleagues have spread to back up Trump and his big lucrative lie.
Yeah, you know, and so Lisa Graves, I invited you here today because we do have these two huge legal things happening concurrently. We have the Supreme Court wrapping up this term by doing the, you know, the decision-orama. Let me ask you something. What the Supreme Court announces, yesterday they gave five of them. There are 13 left. Are they decisions or are they opinions? What do we call them?
Well, they are the opinion of the court, and sometimes they are called the decisions. I think, personally, given the illegitimacy of the appointments to this court, that I think we should consider them to be the opinions of some very narrow-minded right-wing activists who are abusing their position to destroy decades of precedent in order to advance their own personal views, including their own personal religious views, to impose them on the rest of us.
Very much so. So yesterday, they announced five more opinions. They are opinions, but they do act as decisions because laws change on the basis of what they opine, right?
That's correct. Their decisions have the force of law, and but they have no real method of enforcing them. You know, we're about to see them apparently destroy women's reproductive rights.
Yep.
They've already shattered the wall of separation between church and state in terms of having us taxpayers subsidize religious education that is not by groups that don't pay any taxes at all and want to impose their own sectarian their own sex views on kids and get tax subsidy for it. And there are other decisions in the wings that further this very far right agenda that this court has decided to take on. And this term of the court, it sits from October through the summer, the next summer of every year. They chose 77 cases to hear, and 76 of those cases they chose out of thousands of appeals. They had chosen their discretion, meaning they didn't have to choose these cases. They didn't have to take a case on abortion. They didn't have to take a case on guns. They didn't have to take a case on the EPA or on the separation of church and state. They chose those cases because they want to, in my view, rewrite our rights, limit our rights in those on those issues. It's not mandatory jurisdiction. They handpicked these cases to advance their narrow views.
So there are still, as I said, 13 cases that they're going to give their opinions on. They're going to do some tomorrow morning. They announced another day Friday that they're going to dole out more on Friday morning. I guess they really want to get it all done by the end of the month. But we're holding our breath. We got the separation of church and state one yesterday, which is horrible. And we're waiting on one, obviously, that will gut Roe v. Wade. The right to a woman's right to choose that. And then the other one is especially as we're dealing with the first action Congress is taking on guns, tiny as it may be, at least it's something, first time in many decades on the heels of two mass shootings, one the biggest mass murder of little children in a school. And the Supreme Court is going to hand down their opinion on a new rule about concealed carry around in places like New York City, where you cannot have a gun now. That may all go out the window.
This faction at the Supreme Court that is in control because of the illegitimate appointments of Donald Trump that was aided by Mitch McConnell and a whole host of dark money, this faction has decided that it's going to examine and seemingly destroy decades of law on in New York regarding carrying weapons. I think this just shows in many ways how extreme this court is, how out of touch it is with the sentiments of the majority of Americans. And it's eager, it seems, to unsettle decades of law where states and cities have been able to set rules to protect the safety of their citizenry.
Right.
And not have people parading around with these high capacity weapons or rapid firing handguns or long guns, the
AR assault rifles, right? Assault weapons,
Right. And I just, they basically, sort of claim that they're originalists or they're just following what the law says, but they've written out of the Second Amendment the well-regulated militia clause.
Yep,
they
right.
basically deleted that, and then on our First Amendment, they've engrafted this notion that, in essence, human speech can be quite restricted, but that money cannot, that dark money can be spent in our elections and distort our public policy in numerous ways without us being able to uncloak it. And so this court is activist, it's extreme, and there's another decision that I referenced, which is about the power of the EPA, our EPA, to regulate companies and whether the EPA and other agencies will have the authority to regulate the fossil fuel companies that are gouging us daily at the gas pump, paying their executives enormous sums while jacking up the prices of gas and also contributing massively to the devastating climate changes that are underway. And so, this court is I think, as I said, just really this faction of the court is abusing its power. It's stacked now, packed with these extreme people who have these very extreme views of the law because they were handpicked by Leonard Leo, who is bankrolled by unknown billionaires to the American people. People don't know who's bankrolling
right.
him, but we do know that he seemingly has gotten very rich in the process of packing our court with extreme ideologues.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is off topic, but I have to ask it anyway, because you mentioned the EPA and drilling and all that and the price of gas. And President Biden today did a whole thing. I'm going to do a 3-month holiday on the federal gas tax, and I encourage states to do it too. But we need that revenue to keep our roads and our highways. Why is there not a windfall profits tax put on these oil companies who are price gouging at a time of crisis? They are making record profits, and he wants to take our tax dollars away from where they need to go instead of putting a windfall profits tax on these oil companies. I don't hear anybody saying that.
Well, it's really an extraordinary circumstance because the American Legislative Exchange Council, which has been long funded by Charles Koch,
yep.
One of the richest billionaires in the world, the man who controls one of the largest privately held corporations in the world, a big fossil fuel company and speculation company, he has, opposed windfall profits taxes for years. It's been a part of the ALEC agenda, which is this group where state legislators vote as equals behind closed doors with special interests like Charles Koch's many interests that have voting rights within that organization that claims to be the largest voluntary body of state legislators, but really is the largest body of state legislators bankrolled by some of the biggest corporations in the world.
Yep.
And they have opposed a windfall profits tax for years, for decades now. And quite frankly, the American people support that sort of thing because they should not be allowed to do this sort of gouging and have these huge windfalls while the American people are suffering. But they have a friend in Congress named Mitch McConnell and most of the Republican Party who are eager to aid and abet the fossil fuel companies at every turn and would thwart any measure in Congress to adopt a windfall profits tax, which has been adopted by other countries who aren't as captured by dark money as America. Mm-hmm. And so in this instance, Biden has very few tools at his disposal to affect these oil companies because Congress is paralyzed by the way the right-wing politicians are sucking at the teat of the oil company, you know, lobbying money and PAC money and more. And so no windfall profits tax can pass Congress until until the American people remove from Congress so many of these politicians that are so beholden to the oil and gas and and coal industry. And so what Biden has the power to do through his executive powers is to affect the taxes that are on the gasoline tax, the federal taxes that, as you said, do help fund our roads and highways in order to give some people some relief during this period. But the real solution isn't these ridiculous stickers put on pumps by Trump Trumpsters that say Biden did this.
Right.
The real sign should be like Exxon did this and Mitch McConnell did this.
That's
and
right.
The Republicans who refuse to hold these companies accountable as they gouge us and rip us off in order to feather their nest while everyone is suffering because of their extreme and poisonous greed.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, look, I listened to Biden and he's talking about, you know, lifting these taxes for however long. And all I'm thinking is the oil companies are making record obscene profits. That needs to get under control. That's where the problem is. It's not the taxes we're paying that, again, are a necessary part of keeping our roads and highways. Our infrastructure is already falling apart. We're already spending a lot of money to try to get it back together again, but that's being handled by the state. So you know that the Republicans are screwing it up. Anyway, that kind of pissed me off. So thank you for addressing that.
Rightly so. You know, but also the other thing that's astonishing is, you know, Fox and all these right-wing groups like the Independent Women's Forum and these other co-funded groups are attacking the president, you know, like trying to use this as a political issue, as football for the congressional midterms. These are the same groups that claim the free market knows best. The free market could do no wrong. We can't do anything about the free market. And it's this laissez-faire, hands-off, let them gouge us mentality that has empowered them to basically exploit the, you know, increase in demand as the economy has opened up, as unemployment has, you know, been reduced, as people are returning in some ways to their normal-ish lives with the pandemic, you know, with the people who've been vaccinated and are at work or visiting family. And these companies are gouging us and getting some of the biggest profits they've ever had in their entire history. And the fact that these Republicans refuse to hold them accountable, refuse to support, you know, that sort of windfall profits tax and related taxes on them, you know, that's the real scandal right here, is that they are blocking any effort to hold these corporations accountable. And they want to blame Biden for that.
Of course.
And they're like a crucial to basically helping those companies gouge us.
That's what they do. I call it opposite world. It's like they scream about the vaccines. It's my, and they take our my body, my choice in a perverse manner as they're trying to kill our right to abortion. So your body, your choice when it comes to a public health issue, because if you don't get vaccinated, you put other people who are immunocompromised at risk. Where my abortion has nothing to do with you, but they'll use my body, my choice when it comes to the shot, but they're perfectly fine with the government coming into your ovaries and telling you that if you get pregnant in the state of Indiana, you have no recourse because abortion is outlawed from the moment of conception. This kind of stuff, they're fine with, but don't tell me to get a vaccination.
Yeah, it's pretty outrageous because, you know, we've been facing a deadly communicable disease, a contagious disease, and they have objected and thrown up roadblocks in state after state to, you know, masks and to, you know, common sense public health protection since the beginning of the pandemic, as well as trying to stop efforts to ensure that people are vaccinated to prevent the spread of the disease. But abortions aren't contagious. Abortions are
That's right.
a matter for the woman and her doctor and
That's
nobody
it.
Else. It's nobody else's business to get involved in a person's private, personal, reproductive choices. And the fact that this court, this faction of the court that's been handpicked by a hostile anti-choice activist like Leonard Leo, put into place by Donald Trump, who promised these right-wing religious groups that he was going to destroy women's reproductive rights. You know, this little faction on the court is trying to impose their own personal religious beliefs
yep.
about when life begins or about women's reproductive autonomy on all American women. It's astonishing, like you point out, Nicole, that this same political party that they hail from, that they've been embedded in, is also the one that has obstructed time and again efforts to mitigate an actually contagious disease that is an actual public health issue where a million Americans have died.
Mm-hmm.
Many of those Americans would have lived much longer. They were older, but they were living they were living their lives, and their lives were cut short because of this deadly disease. And we had a president who literally a month after the pandemic hit these shores claimed he was going to reopen America in time for Easter.
Right.
So that people could go, you know, share this disease
yep.
at church.
Yeah.
You know, and so this pandering to some religious sects, to some religious partisans is truly remarkable and is antithetical to us having a healthy multicultural society that respects the diversity of views and different religions and is not a theocracy where a subset of judges, this faction, decides to impose their personal private religious beliefs on us as law.
Yeah. No, it's astounding. The hypocrisy is so in your face. And when you point it out to them, it's irony is dead. So Lisa Graves, I take for granted that people know who you are. They're hearing this brilliant woman talk about all this stuff. So I want to explain, you know, why we're talking today. First of all, you mentioned a few minutes ago, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and you mentioned the Koch brothers. I learned of both of those entities through you. Lisa Graves used to run the Center for Media and Democracy, and you exposed. You did ALEC Exposed. You did, what was the Koch one?
Koch Exposed.
Okay, I thought there was another clever... we just lost Lisa. Let me call her back. I didn't think I hung up on her, but let's try again. She is up on Capitol Hill, so maybe we just had a weird glitch.
Oh, I lost you there.
Yeah, but we're back. It's okay. Yeah, we're back.
Okay.
So you ran the Center for Media and Democracy, and these days you're at the helm of another organization called True North Research. They're at truenorthresearch.org, and you're continuing the same amazing work. But before you launched these efforts, you spent a lot of time up on Capitol Hill where you are. You were, and you have the longest resume, but I think it's important, especially in light of what we're talking about today, that people know your CV. You were Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Policy at the Department of Justice in the Clinton administration under Janet Reno, yes?
Yes, and also under John Ashcroft
for
a period.
Oh, boy. Chief Counsel for Nominations for Senator Patrick Leahy on the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. So that would also include, Supreme Court nominees, wouldn't it be? Wouldn't it?
Well, I did my best to try to keep John Roberts off the D.C. Circuit because I feared that he would get appointed to the Supreme Court. But I left right before he was nominated. I didn't want to have him go through on my watch or people like him get onto this court because I was very concerned about how these right-wing judges were being chosen and what their agenda was for America. But I have studied Supreme Court nominations for a long time, and I helped write the playbook for how to respond to these extreme judicial nominees and how to try to protect fair courts. And I've been studying the courts since at least 1989 in terms of the Supreme Court and these theories of deciding cases and more. And I was also the helped lead at the staff level the working group on judicial selection. So wow. I've been involved in that part for many years.
And the list goes on. I mean, you're an adjunct law professor at George Washington Law School. You were senior legislative strategist for the ACLU on national security. It goes on and on. You also, it says in 2018, you also helped shape the national conversation on the Brett Kavanaugh nomination. And I just can't, I know how I, as a non-legal expert, felt about Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett. And your head must have exploded with these people getting on the highest court in the land.
Well, I was particularly disturbed by what happened with the nomination of Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court. President Obama was a duly elected president. Mm-hmm. He'd been reelected. That vacancy arose in February of 2016, and there was ample time to approve the nomination of Merrick Garland, who was really known as a judge's judge. He was a Clinton appointee to the D.C. Circuit, but he was someone who was well-regarded by judges who'd been appointed by parties, presidents from both parties. And yet even a moderate like Merrick Garland was blocked by Mitch McConnell because they wanted to save that seat for someone who was extreme, a right-winger like Neil Gorsuch. And then after another vacancy arose, they chose Brett Kavanaugh, who became infamous for the testimony against him by Dr. Christine Blasey Ford that he had attempted to sexually assault her and had, in fact, physically assaulted her and attempted to harm her. But also, he, on my watch, when I was the chief counsel for nominations, he had lied to the Senate Judiciary Committee about his receipt of stolen memos that were in fact stolen from me. Wow. And other staffers by a Republican staffer, and given to Brett Kavanaugh. He lied about it then. He lied when he was renominated to the D.C. Circuit in the second term of George W. Bush. And then he lied on national television during his Supreme Court nomination, claiming that it was typical for him to receive memos that were obviously stolen from his opponents, namely people like me on the Senate Judiciary Committee, which was utterly false and I think actionable. I think he should be impeached. But that wasn't it. As you point out, then 1 month before the 2020 election, with Donald Trump on the ropes and looking
people
like he's going to
and
lose.
And people
they
already
pushed her
voting.
Through.
Right. People already yes. voting.
Yes. Right. Millions of Americans had already voted yep. and they put through this woman who barely had served as a judge for, a very brief time on the Seventh Circuit, who had been handpicked again by Leonard Leo and Don McGahn, two very activist Catholic anti-choice, anti-gay lawyers. McGahn was at the time then the White House counsel for Trump, and Leonard Leo at the time was the vice president of the Federal Society, which is this right-wing group, libertarian slash conservative group, that, you know, had been helping to create a pipeline for getting these people who had very far right views into powerful positions. And they crammed her through. Mitch McConnell jammed her through the Senate a month before the election and gave her a permanent lifetime spot. And so this court is really illegitimate the way it's been constituted. And the people who've been chosen are people who have been chosen because of their extreme views, because there is a desire, in my view, for a return on investment. And the return on investment is to advance this extremist agenda that Leonard Leo has helped to push forward over many years. And so it's a really terrible shame for this country to have people so unsuited to being judges on our highest court, people who were not chosen because they had a reputation for fairness. Instead, they were chosen because they had a reputation that they would be a sure bet, a sure thing in overturning our rights, including Roe, but also our power to regulate big corporations like Koch Industries and these other fossil fuel companies and more. And so we have a lot of work to do to retake our country, in essence, to restore our democracy and to ensure that we have judges who are actually fair judges, unlike this current faction in control of the Supreme Court.
Right. And what happened? The fact that they pushed Amy Coney Barrett through with less than a month to the election, people were already voting, and they held the seat that should have gone to Merrick Garland open for almost a year because it was an election year. The lies out of these people, the hypocrisy is just stunning. And you talked about I forget in relation to what, but that we don't have there. We have laws, but in many cases, there's no enforcement procedure set up, just like, you know, contempt of Congress. So Mark Meadows refuses to cooperate with the committee, and yet the Department of Justice hasn't pressed any charges. People are, I think, emboldened by Donald Trump's thumbing his nose at the rule of law that happened throughout his entire 4 years, that they think that the law doesn't apply to them. And frankly, we have no way to, we know it does, but we have no way to enforce it. We need a lot of changes, don't we?
We do. You know, it is really actually heartbreaking because I think, you know, when I think about America's history, and certainly it has, had a lot of things to change over time, like the Three-Fifths Clause in the original Constitution that counted people who were enslaved as three-fifths a person, African-Americans. We had a Civil War. We had amendments that were designed to redress that, like the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And then we've just had this struggle for more than a century with these right-wingers who loathe those provisions, who hated the Brown versus Board of Education decision, hated the decision that women have these this inherent right to determine their future, their destiny, to make medical decisions without having the permission of their husband or some state legislator who doesn't even know them. You know, these precedents that this court is determined to overturn, these are the precedents that have really protected American freedom, Americans' intimacy, their right to marry who they love, for two adults in this country to get married, and not have some religious group basically control the law and say that they cannot, that these adults who love each other cannot get married. This court, this faction, and you could see in this leaked opinion by Alito, that they're aiming for the Griswold, the decision that was issued by the U.S. Supreme Court more than 50 years ago that said that women have a right to contraception, that, of course, inherent in our rights as free people, a woman can obtain contraception to make a decision about when and if she is going to start a family. And all these rights are at risk because this extreme faction that was handpicked by Leonard Leo and buttressed by the dark money billionaires who have their own extremist views that he's trying to help implement through these choices, they are now in control of our court. I know it sounds like an intractable situation, an impossible situation, but as you point out, Nicole, had the Senate majority at the time behaved with integrity, the court right now would be 5-4 Democratic appointees to Republican appointees.
That's right.
It would be a 5-4 court, and the right to choose, the right to contraception, the right to marry who you love, the right to regulate these corporations that are, have a substantial impact on climate, the devastating climate change. Those rights would not be in question. They would be being followed as part of our longstanding legal precedent. But instead, we have radicals who've been put in place by Leonard Leo and his dark money funders in order to rip away our rights, in order to advance his extremely extremist and sort of very narrow view of what our rights are. And he was the person who basically set the menu. He chose the people that Donald Trump chose from. So it's like, the chef says, this is the restaurant. It's all hamburgers or whatever. It's all anchovies, choose your anchovy. He chose who Trump chose from. And he chose people who he believed, in my opinion, would destroy our core precedents of the 20th century and roll back the clock to before the New Deal, to the robber baron era, where people like his billionaire funders probably wish the America were still.
Yes. Yes. And so now we are at this very precarious moment in history, I believe, right now, where we're sitting today, because tomorrow, two things are going to happen. Supreme Court hands down another 5 opinions, and Friday morning, probably another 5 opinions, leaving 3 left over for next week to get them all done before the month ends. And among them may be these ones you're talking about. Our right to choose what we do with our bodies when we start a family. Our right to privacy, our woman's right to be is in question. And your right to be safe, on the New York City subway and know that no one there is legally carrying a hidden gun on their person. Well, the Supreme Court could change all of that within the next week. Plus, the committee is still going. Now, what we've learned over the course of these four hearings so far is stuff that we knew because we've been paying attention. Some of the country is finally seeing it. I think it's irrefutable that Donald Trump was the ringleader of this whole thing. He put out a directive, make sure I'm reelected no matter what it takes. And although everybody around him knew he lost the election, they were still carrying water for him. Bill Barr, who now says, it was bullshit. He didn't say that with that resignation letter, which just, kissed the mushroom, as it were. Everybody bent over backwards to appease this man, and they still are, even though we know he is guilty of trying to overturn a fair and free election. But there's still all this pearl clutching going on. Well, do we dare? I mean, how do we ever prosecute a former president? Every other country does. When their president breaks the law, they're prosecuted. I think the United States is the only one that hasn't. I don't know that for a fact, but it seems that way.
Well, America is supposed to have a president and not a king. And
yes.
The idea that Donald Trump is above the law, or that any president is above the law, is anathema to us being a nation of governed by the rule of law,
yep.
Not men.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it is astonishing that people like Barr, failed to alert the American people to the clear and present danger that Donald Trump was. That even when they resigned, supposedly because of their integrity, they refused to denounce him
right.
In their resignation for what he was doing to our country, his efforts to destroy the peaceful transition of government between someone who has lost the election, unequivocally lost the election, whose claims and evidence has been refuted time and time again. The theories have been disputed by good lawyers and advocated by some of these, just partisan hacks, like obviously Rudy Giuliani. You just can't. You can give them credit for now telling the truth, but they had an obligation to tell the truth back then.
Yes.
They had an obligation to alert the American people to the danger we were facing. And Judge Michael Luttig, who was a Fourth Circuit judge, who was very widely respected by conservatives and right-wingers,
mm-hmm.
he testified so compellingly that Donald Trump poses a clear and present danger to our Constitution,
yep.
To our democracy. And what we've seen in these hearings, and I would urge everyone to watch them, go back and watch them if you've missed them, what you see is a compelling story, compelling evidence of a series of criminal acts, of crimes by Donald Trump and his cohorts. And really, in a democracy, these are the most vile crimes in a civil democratic society for someone to threaten election officials with being thrown in jail, unleash his followers and rabid fans to attack them and threaten the lives of these members of Congress and election officials and their families, to say at this point, after everything we've seen and how all of the ridiculous, absurd and outlandish claims that Trump and Rudy Giuliani were putting out there, to say that maybe Trump to say that maybe his followers were right, that Pence should have been
murdered.
Assassinated. Like, this is truly vile, disgusting, loathsome, horrifying behavior by any elected official, let alone the former president of the United States, who unleashed his followers, lit that fuse for them to go and attack the Capitol and pursue the vice president of the United States, who was only doing
the job that he was required to do under the United States Constitution. And so I hope Donald Trump is prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and also Rudy Giuliani and the people around him. And they most certainly should be prosecuted for their crimes.
Yeah, they should. And what worries me is that I don't believe they will, because you, like, you had Benny Thompson say, oh, we're not going to refer this to the Justice Department. And then apparently there was a dust up within the committee saying, excuse me, you may be the chairman, but you don't speak for all of us. And I guess he had to take it back. The bottom line is that they, you know, they're calling this January 6th. Oh, it was just a, you know, it was a typical tourist day at the Capitol. And yet, I don't know if you heard. So Stephen Colbert had a film crew at the Capitol the other day.
Oh, yeah.
With Triumph, the comic dog. Right. And they had appointments at some offices, both Republicans and Democrats, by the way, where they filmed interviews, all well and good. Then after, they did some pickup shots within the Capitol complex and they were arrested. Well, the idiots on the right, the Ted Cruz's of the world, the Tucker Carlson's, are saying that's insurrection. So they want these people to be charged with insurrection, but the people who actually attempted to attack the Capitol, those people are being treated unfairly. The people who peacefully protested in front of Brett Kavanaugh's house, They want to outlaw. You can't protest in front of a Supreme Court justice's house. Yet, did you hear the testimony of Ruby and Shay yesterday, the mother and daughter who were poll workers in Fulton County, Georgia, who Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump targeted, named them, said horrible things about them, accused them of fixing the election, of stealing votes, of moving around flash drives. It was all bullshit, and their lives have been destroyed. These two black women, it turns out, go figure. And that's okay. I mean, it's astounding. I know they already filed a lawsuit and won against OAN. I hope they have a massive suit against Rudy Giuliani, against Donald Trump, against Fox Not News, and everybody else who named their names and made their lives so unbearable right now.
I mean, it was truly chilling to hear that testimony, the testimony that they gave, how their lives have been affected, as well as the others who testified that day. That this the destruction caused by Donald Trump is truly unprecedented in the annals of American history.
Yep.
The idea that people will follow this man and follow his lies, believe them and act on them is genuinely horrifying, because, you know, no one is a more documented liar than Donald Trump, and his lies have consequences. His lies have had very real consequences for a number of individuals.
Oh, yeah.
Whose lives have been threatened and continue to be threatened to this day. And so, you know, we have to stand against this. We have to unite against this. And I think that, you know, it shouldn't be a partisan thing, a Democratic thing, Republican thing, whatever. Like, this is about whether we, you know, have any rule of law in this country, or whether we're going to fall to this guy who is basically just making money off of these lies, whose ego won't allow him to, whose ego won't allow him to tell the truth, basically. And who's willing to basically promote things that his own lawyers told him repeatedly were false and wrong and baseless.
Right.
And so we just have to stand together against this grotesque erosion of our society, by this venal and corrupt and malicious, little cast of characters who, don't care about our Constitution. They don't care about our democracy. They don't really care about freedom. They only care about themselves.
Yep.
And, you know, that is just not, I know that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, who are we? How can these people believe Trump? Because they're watching Tucker Carlson, who in my view has no credibility, who's just lied to them over and over, along with the other Fox personalities, who propped up these theories that have been debunked over and over again.
who give an airtime to this. And then the people like Bannon, who are, you know, actively collaborating with white nationalist factions in other countries.
Right.
To try to, like, move this movement globally. I mean, we have to stand up to these people and defend the best parts about America, defend American ideals, defend the things that we, you know, that we really do and can stand for.
Absolutely.
But we also have to stand up to this court because, you know, John Roberts is someone who helped just completely decimate the voting rights in this country through mm-hmm. his decision to destroy the Article 5 of the or the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act,
right.
which is the enforcement provision. So these right-wing judges are also part of this crisis that we're in. And, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. What we can't do is be defeated by it. We need to organize
right.
To make sure more people are registered to vote. And in my view, to vote out the people who have made this possible and then to expand the court to restore fairness to our courts.
Yep. You know,
create fairness.
Please. We're getting close to the end of the hour. There are two things that I still want to ask you about. One is we heard the testimony yesterday from Rusty Bowers. He is the Arizona Speaker of the House who had integrity. He could not go against his oath to break the law, to do the things that Donald Trump wanted him to do. He was emphatic about it. He talked about those Trumpers, the maggots, breaking into his daughter-in-law's house. His son died. His daughter-in-law is a widow and has children, and she's there alone. And they broke into her house. And yet, this idiot says, and I'm calling him an idiot because of what he said after, his testimony was great. But if he said if Donald Trump got the nomination in 24, he'd vote for him. What?
Yeah. I have to say, you know, I don't, just as an ordinary person in the world who believes in reason and consistency, I am shocked to see people like Bowers or Barr and Pence who continue to suck up to Trump despite his crime, despite his efforts to subvert our democracy. And the fact that they did the right thing in speaking out and not doing his bidding, but that they would vote for this man who's so, uncommitted to the oath that he took to defend our Constitution from enemies, foreign and domestic,
to right.
uphold our Constitution. It's astonishing.
It is astonishing.
I think by Bowers saying that, he really took away from the testimony that he gave.
I agree.
I don't think that you can have both. You can hold both views genuinely and say that you would support Trump despite everything he's done to destroy our Constitution.
I agree. That just was such a disconnect. The other part is I love you. I respect your opinion. Marcy Wheeler is another frequent guest on the show and a friend who I respect, and I think she does great work. Marcy Wheeler is convinced, despite all the criticisms coming his way, that Merrick Garland is just being very thorough and taking his time and putting together a case and will eventually bring charges in connection with all of this. Most of the country is getting a little frustrated. What do you think? Is Merrick Garland going to do the right thing here?
Well, I hope she's right. Garland is a former federal prosecutor, and so I have great hope that he will help build a case for a grand jury to indict the people responsible for these crimes, and that includes Donald Trump. I wish it had happened sooner. I think there's ample evidence that has already been produced of his criminal activity. I know that it's not typical for people to be prosecuted by the next administration, even though Donald Trump was trying to claim that Hillary Clinton should be locked up for the servers, which was just a ridiculous, outlandish claim. But here we have real criminal activity that the evidence demonstrates, as far as I'm concerned, and it needs to be prosecuted. So I'm hopeful that Marcy is right. I know that she's brilliant, and I hope that we will see a grand jury convened, and we will see this former president Donald Trump and his cohorts in these legal schemes indicted, including, quite frankly, Mark Meadows for his role in advancing this. And I look forward to the hearing and evidence and investigation of Jenny Thomas, because she certainly is complicit in this whole effort to overthrow the duly elected government of the United States of America.
Without a doubt. And then they should impeach her husband, too, who should not be sitting on the Supreme Court when his wife is an activist trying to overthrow the government.
Yep. I agree, Nicole. I agree with you.
Lisa Graves, you are the best. Follow Lisa at the Lisa Graves on Twitter. Find her at truenorthresearch.org. Lisa, thank you so much. You're the best. And have fun in D.C. Say hi to everyone for me.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks,
thank you,
Nicole,
for coming.
Thanks, everyone.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Lisa Graves, she just, I told you, she's the best. I'm honored that she comes on here and helps me, you know, wade through all this legal stuff. And she does it so beautifully. We're lucky to have her. All right, with that, we're done. And I got to bolt because I'm going to see Joe Jackson tonight. So I'll leave you with the news, and I'm going to go rock out. All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow's Thursday. We got a hearing. We got Supreme Court. I think we got Howie. We got a full day, 5 o'clock Eastern tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Breaking news overnight. The Washington Post reporting.
I did it again. How did I do that? I keep playing the wrong. I think it's because it's on that machine. And, oh, I know what's happening. My What's News breaks are not transferring over there. Hold on. I'm gonna give you the full one. The new one, the full, this happened yesterday. It's like deja vu all over again, right? All right, here we go. In 3, 2, 1.
Death threats.
What?
Death threats.
No.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Supreme Court on Tuesday ruled that the state of Maine cannot exclude schools who provide religious instruction from a taxpayer-funded state tuition and program because it violates the First Amendment. The court voted 6-3 along ideological lines with a conservative majority, siding with two families who sued the state for religious discrimination. Under Maine's program, families who live in rural areas without public high schools can receive tuition assistance at private schools or go to public schools in other communities, as long as those schools are non-sectarian or explicitly provide religious instruction. The court found that excluding private schools based solely on such criteria violated the constitutional requirement of religious neutrality. Chief Justice John Roberts, who has been a longtime proponent of taxpayer funding for religious schools, wrote the opinion. The three more liberal members of the court dissented, with Justice Sotomayor offering the line of the day. In her dissent, she wrote, quote, "What a difference 5 years makes. In 2017, I feared that the court was leading us to a place where separation of church and state is a constitutional slogan, not a constitutional commitment." And then she added, "Today, the court leads us to a place where separation of church and state becomes a constitutional violation." I'll just leave that right there. The court still has some 13 cases to hand down decisions on. The next day, they'll be releasing some Thursday. Yeah, the same day as the next hearing from the House Select Committee investigating the events surrounding January 6th. On Tuesday, the Select Committee held its fourth public hearing, and it was devastating. Officials from Arizona and Georgia testified before the committee about how then-President Trump and his allies pressured them to help overturn President Biden's 2020 electoral victory. Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel said in a pre-recorded testimony that Trump had called her and asked her to help in the effort and put conservative lawyer John Eastman on the phone to tell her it was important for the RNC to help the campaign gather contingent electors to replace the legal ones. Four state officials from Georgia and Arizona who rebuffed the Trump team's pressure campaign testified yesterday that they received death threats after Trump's supporters accused them of fraud.
Perhaps the most emotional testimony yesterday came at the end of the hearing when two women, Shay Moss and her mother, Lady Ruby Friedman, who were poll workers in Fulton County, Georgia, told their story. How they were scapegoated by Giuliani and Trump, actions that subsequently destroyed their lives.
Do you know how it feels to have the President of the United States to target you? The President of the United States is supposed to represent every American, not to target one. But he targeted me, Lady Ruby. A small business owner, a mother, a proud American citizen who stand up to help Fulton County run an election in the middle of the pandemic.
Just absolutely shameful and sickening. Well, it is primary season, and people went to the polls on Tuesday in D.C. and Virginia, and runoffs were held in Alabama, Arkansas, and Georgia. Let's start with Georgia, where two Trump-endorsed Republican House candidates both lost their respective primary runoffs. Aw, isn't that too bad? And in Alabama, it was the opposite, where Mo Brooks, who Trump unendorsed, went down to defeat at the hands of the new candidate that Trump did endorse. Following along, and in Washington, D.C., Mayor Muriel Bowser won her Democratic primary and is now poised to win a third term. And by the way, the recount in Texas has concluded, and incumbent Blue Dog Henry Cuellar retained his seat, although challenger Jessica Cisneros came as close as one can get. In the recount, she came up about 200 votes short. She would have been so good in there. Well, the Senate on Tuesday cast a key vote to advance the newly released bipartisan gun safety legislation. It is a major step moving the bill forward as lawmakers face pressure to do something in the face of our gun epidemic. The bill still has a few hurdles to clear. In the Senate, it'll face two more major votes, first to break a filibuster and then on to final passage. The vote to break the filibuster will be a critical, high-stakes moment for the legislation since it will require 60 votes to advance, which means that at least 10 Republicans will need to join all the Democrats in support. But that's what happened last night. The bipartisan group resolved a number of outstanding issues in the last few days, including a disagreement over the boyfriend loophole. Under the updated law, those convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence against an intimate partner would be prevented from purchasing firearms for at least 5 years. The reforms also increase resources for mental health, incentivize red flag laws, and more. They're still working towards holding a final Senate vote by the end of the week, ahead of the July 4th 2-week recess. Because of course they're going on another 2-week recess, don't you know? They've got to prepare to take off the entire month of August to campaign. Come on.
Come on, man. I got
the And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.